The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas Show. Today, I believe, is Friday. It is. That means last night there was a presidential debate. I remember it. I watched it. And I have, as my guest right now, continuing from hour one, Jenna Ellis. And an hour in our next segment, and for the rest of this hour, we're going to be talking to our friend Kevin McCullough, aka Votestradamus. Jenna, we were just talking in the last segment about how some Christians, like John Piper recently, they seem to think that they can sit this one out, and they equate the policies of a Joe Biden presidency with the cultural effect that Trump has. We don't need to go into this, but I just wanted to mention that I think that John Piper is making some mistakes. He's a sweet man and a wise, wonderful Christian leader, but I think it's a personality thing. I think that he is very serious, very sober. Trump is just the opposite, and I think people like Piper read that merely as vulgar, don't really get the joking and the hyperbole, and so they're willing to just sit on their hands and not vote, which is a terrible thing. I didn't mean to get into that. I want to talk more about the debate.
But one comment on that, and actually, I think you're right, Eric, that that because I didn't actually, I saw that article and skimmed through, but I was also reading a Tim Keller article. So I want to make sure, I think you're right that Tim Keller has gone woke. John Piper has not yet, so my comments in the last segment were definitely Tim Keller, but with John Piper and that cultural view, I mean, there is definitely a problem with the culture right now. And they're seeing that problem, but I think that they're conflating the influence of so many other things about the culture, the woke influence, you know, all of these things that are going on in the emergent church, in doctrinal issues, and they're conflating that. People like Piper are conflating that with the personality of President Trump, and they're not seeing the distinctions between what's going on in the culture versus what's actually going on in policy and politics. And so they are trying to say, I don't want any part of the woke culture. And so somehow they're thinking if they go and vote for Trump and they participate in politics, that somehow that's then saying that they agree with everything else. And I think that that's really misleading to a lot of Christians, because whether or not, you know, you agree with how prolific the president is on Twitter, I mean, he has to engage in a way in politics that is very, very different than church. We understand from scripture, there are different spheres of authority. That's actually what Thomas Jefferson meant by the separation of church and state. It's not that they don't touch each other or that the government is completely secular. All Jefferson meant was that there are two different realms of authority. So the king is not the head of the church. And in America, of course, we have our separation of powers. We have citizen-led government. But our president is not the head of the church. And so for people like Piper and for evangelical Christians who say, I can't participate because politics is too dirty, or I don't like everything about this president, they're conflating the understanding of the purpose of your vote and why politics matters in terms of making sure that we keep a moral and upright society in our policy, so that that then can still influence culture and the church is protected to still spread the gospel.
I think that there are so many issues here, and that's why so many Christians are confused. But I think I said it earlier, I think for Piper, it's a personality thing. That his personality is so diametrically different than Trump's that he can't really fathom Trump. Trump is a bridge too far for him. And he equates Trump's boastfulness and those kinds of things with, I guess, in other words, if Trump really were what he kind of pretends to be sometimes, it's kind of like a role he plays, that would be different. But I simply think that some people don't get him. They don't see the shtick a little bit, you know, and I think 50% of it is shtick. It's what he does. It's kind of a New York bragging kind of persona. So some of that I really don't like at all, but some of that I find wildly entertaining, and I find it very effective in terms of how he communicates. And I think that, as I say, it is a personality thing. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, if he were the last president in the history of the world and is going to be president forever, that's one thing. But the point is, he's a president for a season, I hope for another 4 years, who gets to do some things to preserve what we have so that we can redeem the culture. In other words, I think that if you get somebody like a Biden in, he is going to enact policies that are effectively going to make it impossible for us ever to have a culture that enables people to be virtuous, to be free, and to do all the things that we need to do to be Americans.
Yeah. And look at the difference between President Trump and what he's been able to accomplish because of some of that brash, boisterous personality that he has had to fight back, because the culture for so long and how far we went dramatically left during the 8 years of the Obama-Biden administration. If you look at the difference between President Trump and the 17 other Republicans that were running in 2016, I genuinely don't believe that any of those others could have done in the last 4 years what President Trump has done. We needed someone like him, and God used him to make sure that our society was preserved to the extent that we have been over the last 4 years. I don't think that any of those other candidates would have had as many sincere Christians in the administration around him advising him as President Trump does. And so they're not seeing the big picture.
That's an understatement. No one has ever had more serious Christians in his administration ever. No one comes close to President Trump. So that to me is very interesting. The other thing that's interesting and needs to be said is that what Piper and some folks seem to be missing is that someone like President Obama, for example, was very civil to the point of being schoolmarmish and condescending. And with a straight face and in a polite way, he said things that were not only in some cases lies, but that in other cases were extremely pernicious, evil things. With a sober face, without bragging, he enacted policies that enable us under our laws to tear children's limbs from their bodies while they can feel pain in their mother's wombs. And I thought to myself, my goodness, wouldn't you prefer somebody who just speaks the truth in the way that they do rather than somebody who is so buttoned up that they can look in your face and with civility tell you things that are as uncivil and foul as anything that anyone could say? And obviously when President Obama said, you know, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your plan, you can keep it. He said it over and over and over again, knowing that he was lying. I find it extraordinary that some people seem to prefer that kind of personality to the personality of a Trump, because I think that kind of personality leads to total cynicism in the body politic. And they say that these people are liars, and I don't believe in the system, and I hate the system, and they're all corrupt. So that's kind of a counterpoint.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And for people like Piper and other Christians who are so myopically focused just on personality and just on the ways that he comes across, I mean, would you rather have a gracious lie or the harsh truth? I mean, and that's really what we're dealing with. If you look at the difference between someone like an Obama versus someone like a President Trump, I mean, and Joe Biden is neither. He's, you know, he's harsh lies. I thought, as we talked to earlier, he just came across disastrous last night. And it was President Trump who was actually very gracious and presidential. But for people, you know, who are Christians who think that somehow if they cast their vote to protect life, to protect religious liberty for the policies, that that's somehow an endorsement of everything that President Trump is personally, back all the way before he was a Christian, while he was a Democrat.
Over time, Jenna, my apologies. Everything you say, thank you. Wonderful. We'll have you back as soon as possible. God bless you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
Flows and flows of angel hair, ice cream castles in the air.
Folks, welcome. We're talking about the debate. And, you know, when I think of presidential debates, the first thing that usually pops into my mind is my friend Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell and MyPillow. If you go to MyPillow, you can get all kinds of discounts if you use the code Eric. Chris, do you have anything to say about that, or do you just not care about Mike Lindell?
Well, yeah, actually, I was a little jealous because I didn't get a Mike Lindell stand-up. So I thought maybe I could just bring in a Mike Lindell, you know, via green screen in the background. So I'm running an ad right now on loop indefinitely.
So if people are watching this on YouTube, and by the way, I want to say before we bring in Vote Stradamus, please follow us on YouTube. Please subscribe to this channel on YouTube. There's a lot of stuff that we do visually that if you're listening as a radio listener, obviously it's a radio show. Everybody knows that. But if you can subscribe to YouTube and watch us on YouTube, and I want to say this too before Vote Stradamus pops his head in his turbaned head, yes. I want to say that if you're not subscribed to my newsletter, folks, I say this to all my friends and they go, no, I'm not subscribed. Please, folks, go to ericmetaxas.com. Please. It says subscribe to the newsletter. Put in your email. Put in the email of your friends. Put in your husband, your wife's email. Why? Because every single week we send out a ton of stuff so that if you miss anything, it's right there teed up for you. And you can say, oh, my goodness, Eric Metaxas had the Pope on. I wasn't listening that day. Eric Metaxas argues with Pope Francis. Holy cow. Folks, if you're not subscribed, you won't know. So I'm just telling you, please go to ericmetaxas.com, subscribe to my newsletter, go to the YouTube page for the Eric Metaxas Show, subscribe to the YouTube page, and whatever you do, go to mypillow.com, use the code Eric, and you'll get a discount that'll just blow your mind, all right?
Yeah, now I will say, yeah, your discount is probably the best one out there. There may be a couple others.
I certainly know there are none better. And
yeah,
Eric,
there's
four
better.
Letters. It's easy to remember. Holy cow. Chris, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it looks like Vote Stradamus has just come in. Vote Stradamus, we want to know, what did you make of the debate? By the way, in case people don't know, you're Kevin McCullough. And you're a radio show host and you're my friend and we've dubbed you Vote Stradamus because you're a political prognosticator like no one who has ever existed. So tell us, what did you make of the debate?
I thought last night was a fantastic appearance for the president. I thought that he demonstrated great restraint and control. I think my one bit of concern after the first debate was that he just rescued Joe Biden from himself too many times, and he didn't last night. He let Biden wander to the edge of the stage, and on a couple of occasions, he let him wander off the stage. And I thought it was a very strong showing for the president. He seemed very calm. I knew when they got through the COVID-19 section at the very beginning, which is Biden's whole, that's his whole case as to why you can't reelect the president, because evidently he's terrible for COVID-19. The president firmly won the COVID-19 section of the debate. And after that, it was not even a close contest the rest of the way.
I just got one question I want to ask. Who built the cages, Joe? Who built the cage?
There were so many of those one-liners last
night. No, but that was the classic. Who yeah. Built the Cages, Joe? Because the genius of it is it combines a kind of paternalistic condescension when you call him Joe. Like, who built the cages, Joe? Like, it's just I just find it very funny. And then later on,
my favorite attack line from the president was, and he kept feathering it back into the conversation very effectively, but he said, Joe, you had 47 years in the Congress and you had 8 years by Obama's side. You had 8 years, Joe. Why didn't you do it before now? That's an ultimate question that the Biden campaign has no response to.
Well, and a number of times he said, you're all talk, no action. All right. Talk, no action. There's something about the president's delivery that is really admirable. In other words, he has an ability to put things over rhetorically that I thought he did a great job. And I think I guess Biden comes across as sour and bitter and fearful when he's talking about all these people that are dying. And so it really, I think most Americans, except people who are already predisposed to be fearful, maybe some of the elderly, but I think most Americans aren't buying it. I mean, we know that it's serious, but we also know that if you're hiding in your basement and you're pretending like it's the end of the world and you're pretending like there's nothing else that needs facing, the only thing that needs facing is COVID, that's an absurdity. But he hammered that. I mean, even to the point of virtue signaling, when he walks on the stage, he's wearing his mask and then he takes it off. And I thought, you know,
at the end, when he tries to kiss Jill in the masks, the masked kissing was just.
I missed that. Well, listen, the reason we have Votestradamus on this program is we'd like to know, do you think this moved the needle?
Actually, I don't. I think I said this the last time I was with you. I'm not convinced that the needle can be moved for a lot of people in this situation. I think that most people I know have already decided exactly who they're going to vote for. But I will say this. If there was some uncomfortableness with the president's first debate and kind of the aggression and the kind of strong presentation that he made there, this gave people a nice, easy reason to relax and to say, okay, we don't have the angry tornado that's going to be president. And I actually love last night's President Trump. He's charming in many respects. When he turned to the moderator and said, you're doing a surprisingly good job tonight. I mean, there's just something about that is so utterly beyond himself. Everybody thinks that he's the most narcissistic man on planet Earth. And I just don't get that vibe. He's very strong. He's very opinionated. He wants to get things done and he believes that he's right. But I think that deep inside, there's a very charming individual that also just really actually handles people quite well. And I think you got to see that guy a little bit last night.
Well, I really felt that because of the previous performance, the bar was very low for Trump on this debate, and he cleared it magnificently. All he had to do.
The Democrats did themselves in because they kind of on all the media leading up to it on all the channels, they had the surrogates on talking about, you know, well, we're expecting the president to come out and hammer us and be mean and nasty and come for us. And I just, you know, blow the expectations away. Just be kind, control. It was a really strong performance in so many ways, not the least of which was he also controlled the substance. He got in the topics that he wanted to get in. He did bring up the Hunter Biden laptop. He did bring up the corruption issue. He did work his way into those areas that some people had said he wouldn't be able to. And I think that it was just a masterful use of the moment, the opportunity, the demeanor, and the content of the evening. I thought it all worked in his favor.
I'm guessing that if any needle was moved, it was with suburban women who needed to see that he is capable of being controlled, measured, responsible, unemotional. That was really magnificent on his part that he was able to do that. And look, we've seen him do it before. We know he's capable of it. But the fact that he chose to do it last night, I really do think that there are a lot of people who all they needed to know was, can he do that? Will he do that? Is this a guy when things get tough who flies off the handle or who can be in control? I really do think that he moved that needle. So I'm on the chart that I don't have. I would say that maybe he picked up some district someplace. But so at this point, Kevin, you have your famous chart, which you put on Twitter, and I always retweet it when I see it. You have him clearly winning this election. Is that still the case?
Yes. In fact, I released the most recent version of it on Wednesday, in which I did move some states around. But let me tell you kind of where I see it at. He can lose one of the Midwestern Rust Belt states that he won in 16 and still win a majority of the Electoral College. So he could lose either Wisconsin or Michigan. And I don't think he's going to lose either one of them. But I'm saying that you could take one of those off the board, and I feel like all of the dark red that I have on the rest of the map is strong enough that he will be reelected. Now, if you add all the lighter red that I have on the map, he goes from 279 up to 328, which would be a bigger number. I think he had 309 in 2016. So my earliest prediction was 34 states. I think I'm coming in at 35 right now. But let me just give you an election night signal to kind of actually, you got to take a break. But when we come back, I'll be glad to do that, because there, I think there will be a tell similar to a poker player on election night on the map. And this one tell will tell you whether he's going to just win or if he's going to win even more than what I've predicted.
Okay. And don't forget, folks, we need your help. The Alliance Defending Freedom. Go to MetaxasTalk.com. Please give anything you can give. Go to MetaxasTalk.com. We really do need your help. It's an important cause. Thank you.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot.
Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net.
An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first. See us at NRIA.net.
I could feel your heartbeat, and you didn't even say a word. I could feel your heartbeat.
Folks, I'm back with Votestradamus, a.k.a. Kevin McCullough, husband, father, radio host, political prognosticator, seer. You're basically telling us, or you were telling us before, that you've got this this map. You've shown it a couple of times. Well, you go down, you really get in the weeds. And then before this, before this segment, you said that there was some specific tell that on election night we'll be able to tell from this whether he's going to go, whether he's going to win, or he's going to win particularly bigly.
Well, the last time I was with you, Eric, I talked about why the electoral combination for him is going to be different. He's going to do much better with African Americans. He's going to do much better with Latinos than Republicans normally do. And that in and of itself reshapes some of the maps that people are looking at. So if they're thinking he has to have X number of suburban women to replicate the model of 2016, that may not necessarily be true, because if you have up to 25% of the African American vote, well, that's about 17% more than he got in 2016, and it would be well over the record that any modern era Republican has. So let me tell you, if they'll be doing results by the hours, right? So this hour, XYZ state will close, and then the next hour, a few more states. And in the early rounds of closures, the Commonwealth of Virginia will go in the earlier rounds. I don't know if it's at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, but it'll be somewhere in their Eastern time. right now I have Virginia as a very light blue, and the very light blue is still my fear and predication that you've got Washington, D.C. and the urban region around it that is going to turn out big, big, big Democratic numbers in some of those more liberal suburbs of Washington, that you're going to have a more liberal vote that's going to maybe offset what would be in the rest of the state. However, I have been bludgeoned by Virginians in email and direct messages this week saying, Kev, you don't know what's happening here. The fever pitch is more than it was in 16, and he barely lost it in 16. So if, and I'm going to keep it in the blue column, I think I will release at least one more map on election day that will be my final pick. But right now it looks like I'm going to keep it light blue. But if it happens to go red on election night, look for him. If that is in fact the case, that means the shape-shifting theory that I've put forward really is true, and the rural and the suburbs dominated the city. Look for Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois to be closer than it should be. Look for New Mexico. Look for California to be closer than it should be. Look for Oregon to possibly flip, and look for even a closer margin in Washington state. Why is all of that the case? Because it means if he's doing that well in a place where he shouldn't, that means that the fervor that the Trump campaign has worked up is going to be able to take that red wave across the country. I don't think he wins California. I certainly don't think he wins New York, but I think both of those states will be closer for him than they were in 16. And I think Virginia will be the light switch. If it switches to red, it's going to be a rout. If it stays blue, he could still have a sizable win, but it will probably more reflect what 2016 was.
Well, what I find interesting is that, this president probably will win a larger percentage of the black vote in America than any Republican president ever has won.
And it makes sense. Yes.
And it makes sense, because to me, you have someone who made the case last night and has made the case many times that he has gone above and beyond with giving funding to historically black colleges. Why didn't Obama and Biden do that? Why didn't they do that? They simply didn't. He obviously economically improved the lot of all minorities in a way that was so dramatic that it was historic. And, you know, you can go on and on from there. I also think that Biden's pick of a vice president, you know, we don't hear anything about Kamala Harris. Why? She's not very likable. She doesn't seem, you know, in terms of how liberal she is, she's literally the most liberal senator who exists in the Senate. 100 senators
that includes Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
And Bernie Sanders, you know. And also, I think, again, you know, it's the cynical thing about picking somebody who's supposedly black. I think I am far darker than she is. And she's married, of course, to a white man who is even whiter than you, and you're as white as a vampire. And so when you play these kind of race politics, I think it cuts both ways. I think a lot of black people don't like her. There's nothing appealing about her. They don't think that she's an advocate for them. She put many of them in prison in California. So I really, I don't think he did himself any favors by picking her. And I think, of course, many people really do believe she will be the president. And that's the reason they're hiding her, because they don't believe that he's going to be able to be president for four terms. And he's certainly not going to be able to stand up to the AOC plus three and the super liberals. He just doesn't have it in him to stand up to them. He's going to go along with them.
That battle on a daily basis. I mean, there's not much evidence that anything that he believed when he started the campaign that he still holds to. So he's backtracked on Obamacare. He's backtracked on fracking. He's backtracked on just about everything imaginable. And sometimes he's flipped positions a couple of times, given whatever state he's talking about.
Actually, we're gonna go to break here. We're gonna come back. I want to talk about all of that stuff with you, fracking, etc. We're talking to Kevin McCullough, Vote Stradamus. Don't go away.
Think of me, babe, whenever. Some
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works. Hey there, folks. Last night, there was a debate. If you missed it, we're here to tell you what you missed. Not much. Trump was measured, quite wonderful. There were a few moments, Kevin, when the president really got Biden on the ropes. On the issue of fracking, it is obvious that Biden is between a rock and a hard place. He is stuck. His left flank is demanding that he be against all fossil fuels. He'd be for the Green New Deal. He'd destroy the fracking industry, the oil industry. And he's trying to have it both ways by saying yes to that. But then when questioned, he goes, oh, yeah, but we're going to transition. It's going to transition. But the president got him to say that he's going to phase out the oil industry, that he is going to phase out fracking. I think he lost a ton of votes in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Texas because he's on the record. He said these things.
Right. No, he did. And he was not very artful. The real kind of interesting thing about last night was that it appeared in multiple places in the debate that when it came to whatever the topic was, Joe had one point and he could not get off of that point. There was no nimbleness to his rhetoric to be able to make a follow-up point and then a point that followed that. So he would kind of get stuck in these moments. And when it came to the fracking and the fossil fuels, he even ends up admitting that 11 million jobs will have to leave the economy. It was just a stunning admission at the very end of what was a really good debate for President Trump in every other way. Trump won on three levels last night. He won in the fact that he didn't get in Biden's way of Biden just kind of self-imploding. He won from the standpoint that the topics worked better for him than he had anticipated. And actually, the moderator was, of all of them so far, the most fair of the three. And then he just had a spectacular performance himself. But those three layers of the evening for Trump all worked in his favor. And in the adverse, Biden was on the inversion of all those things. So when it came to fracking, he tried to make some mumbled, incoherent dual standard. But everybody knows that soundbite on talk radio today will be put side by side with the montage of soundbites that has been on Twitter for a week of him saying, I'm absolutely going to ban fracking. And you won't be able to have it both ways. And yes, Pennsylvania and Ohio, that especially hurt him. They had been making rumblings about making strides in Texas. I don't believe any of that, by the way. I don't think Trump is even nearly in danger in Texas. But for Pennsylvania, which is kind of where the whole ball of wax comes down to, it killed him. That handed Donald Trump Pennsylvania last night, which I already thought was trending in his direction.
Well, I think also that there's a phoniness whenever he talks about growing up in Scranton and so on and so forth. I don't think anybody buys it. The man has been at the center of power in the world, in the United States, since the early 70s. I mean, try to get your head around that. Since the early 70s, he's been a senator. He's expected to be president his whole life. He has been, you know, drinking from the public trough since he was a very young man, since he was a balding young man, before hair transplants were affordable. And the fact of the matter is that most people get that. That's who he is. He's a very, very wealthy man. He has made a lot of money in politics, which you're not supposed to do. That's called corruption. And I think finally he's being called on that corruption. It's obvious. What Trump said yesterday about the mayor of Moscow's wife or so, I can't remember the detail, but I thought, wow, how do you counter that?
Well, and he couldn't. And obviously he was frustrated that Biden was frustrated that the conversation was allowed to go there. What they very much had signaled that they were going to do was not discuss foreign policy at all. And even when the moderator herself decided to ask about Hunter Biden, Joe had to probably, you know, have his pacemaker kicked back in at some point, because that was not supposed to be part of the entire regimen. And what ended up happening was one of those topics led to the other portions of those topics. And again, Joe was stuck. He couldn't transition very well. So Trump hits him with the mayor of Moscow's widow, who had given Hunter the $3.5 million. Next thing you know, you're talking about the laptop from hell and the recent revelations of what has come out this week in terms of the cut, the $10 million cut that was set aside for the big guy, that now a third party, objective party of the emails has identified everybody in the chain. It was just it was a whole stack of disasters for Joe when it came to that section of the debate last night.
I mean, I really think that most Americans, when you hear $3.5 million, that is so much money. The idea that this drug addicted poor kid, I got to be honest, I feel sorry for Hunter Biden, but that his father sucks him into this filthy, corrupt world, and that a guy who evidently has no skills or close to no skills could get $3.5 million. This is just from one source. How does anyone read that as anything but corruption? It's an unbelievable amount of money for somebody who evidently has no skills except the skill to be the son of a sitting vice president.
I thought that it was also very interesting that Biden tried to turn the Iran portion of that discussion back on Trump. And say that he was going to be tougher on Iran than Trump would be. And it didn't take long for people on my Twitter feed to respond back as I tweeted out. Does being tough with Iran include sending them $750 billion of cash on pallets in private planes? Because that was Joe Biden's idea of getting tough with Iran the last time that he was in charge, along with, you know, co-supporting and authoring the Iran deal, which was a disaster. I think there were so many things last night that the president, by showing the restraint that he did, letting Joe talk for as long as he did and let him wander into these areas, he just helped his own reelection chances in a huge way.
Well, when he kept asking the question, who built the cages, Joe? Who built the cage? It just kind of hung
8 years.
It hung out there.
That's right.
And yes. And then he says that, you know, you all talk, no action, all talk, no action. I mean,
I
thought
personal line was when he said, I'm the reason, you're the reason I ran, Joe.
Yes.
You and Obama are the reason that I got into.
You guys are the reason that I got into politics. We'll be right back with Kevin McCullough. Final segment with Kevin McCullough. Kevin, I don't know if we want to wade into what John Piper said yesterday. Three people that I love: John Piper, Phil Vischer, and Tim Keller, I think are really, really misreading things. And by being vocal in their misreadings, giving a lot of evangelicals permission not to vote or to vote for Biden, I think they're making terrible, terrible mistakes. And what John Piper said in the article that he put out yesterday, I thought he's doing a couple of things that are particularly wrong. He's judging the president. For example, he says unrepentant sexual sin. And I have to say, I don't know how John Piper can claim to know that the president is unrepentant. The president doesn't owe John Piper or the American people a confession. It really is between him and his wife and his God. And I do think that he is repentant, to be honest. I think at this point he is repentant. And I've talked to people who know him personally, who tell the story of how he became pro-life when Barron was born. That's pretty recent. That's 15 years ago. I really do think he has changed. And so when people like Piper make those comments, I think you're pretending as though a president is supposed to confess to the American people or to you and all the reformed pastors, you know, in Minnesota. I mean, I don't really get that.
Well, and let me just back up for sake of context for your listeners. You know, we had a similar discussion about Keller a couple of weeks ago. Keller was arguing in the big picture that the Bible addresses sin, but doesn't address ways to best negate that sin in society. I disagree with that. I think that they're in the totality of scripture. I think you can use wisdom to say opposing candidates that would advance abortion aggressively is a good way to diminish abortion. The difference with what Piper brought out was that he said that these sets of sins were equal to these sets of sins. And he right. tried to make it a character issue between the two gentlemen themselves. I'm with you. I don't know the details of Trump's sexual sins. I don't know what he's done. I don't know what he's confessed. I don't know what he's apologized for. I don't know any of that. I also thought it was a little disingenuous to say that Trump has an anger problem or a temper problem and Joe Biden doesn't, or that Trump is vulgar and Biden isn't. On the day that Barack Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law, an open mic caught Joe Biden saying into Barack Obama's ear, "This is a big effing deal." And he like it was vulgar. It was the definition of vulgarity. So to be these kind of nitpicky things when you're talking about sins of character and personality and something that affects mostly one individual versus a culture of abortion, a culture of sexual anarchy, a culture that is advancing a godless perspective that impacts many millions of people and many millions of innocents in the process, particularly with the abortion. I don't think it's a fair or intellectually honest argument that Piper's making.
Kevin, let's be honest. What is darker than the idea of Barack Obama with tremendous civility lying to the American people? What is more evil than pretending to be a sober-minded, good person when you are enacting diabolical policies like ripping children apart in their parents' wombs while pretending to be for biblical marriage and then suddenly flipping and changing the whole nation? I mean, the idea that he did all these things civilly without bragging and stuff, honestly, I cannot imagine how we can overlook that. We're out of time. I hate that. Kevin McCullough, I love having you on this program. Folks, follow KMC Radio on Twitter and everywhere you can find him. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. The Binge Thinker for my thoughts on all of these things that we've discussed.
TheBingeThinker.com. TheBingeThinker.com. Yes.